Check, testing, 1, 2. That's it. Shabbat shalom. Technical difficulties, we just work through those things too. Yeah, it's kind of like our relationship and our working throughout our work week and during our day, right? Things just step in your way that just you don't expect sometimes, and you just learn to work through it. Sometimes you work through it with the right motives, and sometimes we don't. We got to fix those motives. Prescott mentioned some good points in the Haftorah the other night about Solomon. He did it with the wrong motives. It's supposed to be according to Yehovah's commands. How many knows that his Torah is pure? His Torah is whole. It works. It's from the heavenlies. That's what we wear these zitzits for, the blue. It's his commands, his heavenly word. It's perfect. He says around his throne is cloud, darkness, but his throne is set on right rulings, on mishpatim. It's set on right rulings, mishpatim. It's not movable. It's immovable. So if we're standing on the true, pure word of Yehovah, it will be immovable. So that's why we go through all these trials, testings, tribulations. It's to test our character. We're fooling ourselves that we're just here to grab the word and say we saved and we do nothing with it. We got to do something with it. That's why Yeshua was tested. Our master was tested. He put the word on, and when you put the word on, it gets tried to see if it's movable. And if it's immovable, it's true. It's tested to see if it's real or not. And this next Torah portion is going to be talking about the oil, the olive press. But I've been kind of studying, going through the garments. The Kohen, last couple of days. So I'm going to kind of more stay on that tonight. And I'll let Scott take the oil tomorrow. So yeah, that's we get tried and we get tested. So if we think we're just going to receive the word and hear it and not be expected to do something with it, we're just fooling ourselves. That's why we can't just be a hearer only, but a doer of the word. So we put it in our hearts and our minds. The problem is we have a false ego. A false ego. We're all born with sin. Sin gives us a false ego and a false impression of, like, let's take love for example. Man's love with sin in it is not like the love that God gives. Our Elohim, Yehovah, has a different kind of love. And I'm going to kind of share that for an example. Another thing, we just can't go by English translated Bible. We got to look through Hebrew eyes. I'm going to show you a little example here that I have. I don't have nothing to show, but I'm going to read it. There's a word study I found the other day. It's called good thing. And we all say good morning, Boker Tov. Me and Scott greets each other every morning with a Boker Tov. We'll call each other on the phone. Boker Tov. Tov is good. So many can relate with the word Tov. So the word study is this. It's a good thing, Tov. Proverbs 18:22 in the English King James Version Bible. Whosoever finds a wife finds a good thing and obtains favor of the Lord. Practically every modern translation joins in lockstep with the King James and says that finding a wife is finding a good thing. This is obviously translated by men. Finds a good thing? Question mark. Makes it sound like finding a wife is like locating a decent used car. Only a male translator would render a wife as a thing. You know, just like another household appliance. How women since the King James Version of 1611 have stood for being called a thing is beyond me. With verses like this, calling a woman a thing is no wonder they were considered second-class citizens. How many weddings have you attended where the male preacher quotes Proverbs 18:22, declaring that finding a wife is finding a good thing? I bet if it was a female preacher, she would find an alternative rendering. Is it any wonder why women were barred from attending seminary and going in ministry? Teach them Hebrew, and they would learn the secret that women are not things. Even in modern times, if a woman attends a seminary, they study missions or Christian education, which effectively steers them away from the biblical languages where they would have learned the reality of alternative renderings. Women just obediently read their English translations and said, "My gosh, if the Bible calls me a thing, then I guess that's what I am." Let's get one thing straight. The word thing is not in the original Hebrew. Literally in the Hebrew, this is matzah. Now, I was telling my wife this story, and my daughter Casey's learning Hebrew, and she caught wind of that word. She goes, "Daddy, Daddy." So she interrupted me when I was talking to my wife. She goes, "I know what matzah is. Matzah is where you got to go find it. You know, you got to go search out and look for it." And before I could even finish speaking, that's what it's talking about. Matzah. Matzah. To find a wife. Find a good. To find or discover. And then the word isha, not sure if that's exactly how you pronounce it, is woman, female, or wife. Find a wife, find a good. Yet these words have many secondary and alternative renderings that need to be explored. For instance, the word isha, rendered here as wife, also means woman or female. Each, every, one, together, or many. In the Akkadian, it is the word anesh, which means soft and delicate. But wait, that's the Christian lexicons telling us that. There's a rabbi, Samson Hirsch, 19th century Jewish linguist and Hebrew master, translates the word to its Semitic origins as a word used for one who nourishes, who creates, one who withstands, and is a supporting pillar. Whoever finds a wife who creates, nourishes, withstands, and is a supporting pillar has found, in the words of Ken Taylor, the Living Bible, one translator, brave enough to put this into its proper context, is a treasure. But you must find matzah, this treasure. Matzah also has many different meanings, and we must consider this in its cultural context. Marriages were arranged in those days, sometimes even at birth. A male child would be matched to a female child. Marriages were arranged to form alliances between families and treaties between nations. People did not marry out of love. The Hebrews believed that two people learned to love each other. Jacob may have loved Rachel, but her father was not moved by that. He had the authority to determine who his daughter would marry, and he decided to marry off the oldest daughter. Love had nothing to do with it. You would learn to love each other. Throughout the ages, marriages were arranged even up to the time of Shakespeare. Marriage is still arranged, and the idea of falling in love was a scandal. In fact, one nation in the Middle Ages made it a capital crime for falling in love and getting married against the father's wishes. Even today, it's considered proper for a young man to ask a father for his daughter's hand in marriage, even before he proposes to the young lady. So the whole idea of finding a wife does not fit the cultural context. A man did not find a wife. He had nothing to do with finding a wife. His father, family, or a matchmaker was the one would do. Like Yeshua, the bridegroom in Israel, his bride, they should match. Isaiah 61:10, "I greatly rejoice in Yehovah, my being exalts in my Elohim, for he has put garments of deliverance on me. He has covered me with a robe of righteousness, as a bridegroom decks himself with ornaments, and as a bride adorns herself with her jewels." And this scripture is in the Torah portion with the robe and the garments. To be clothed in righteousness, robed in righteousness. So Yeshua and his bride should match with the decks himself with ornaments, and a bride adorns herself with jewels, with righteousness, with right rulings. The bride and the bridegroom should match. By the first century, the idea of betrothal had become a custom built out of the idea that love was important, not the reason to marry, but a chance must be given to fall in love. The couple who often barely knew each other were formally married, but then were not allowed to live together or consummate that marriage for 1 year. During that time, the family would support the couple so the bridegroom would not have to work and could spend all his time getting to know his bride without an intimate relationship. In those days, love was not physical but emotional. You had intimacy to fulfill your love, not to fall in love. The couple would fall in love during this time together, even though their marriage was the result of an election between the families, which, by the way, is where Paul gets the idea of election and salvation. I didn't pick Yeshua. Yeshua picked us, right? There was no if I love him or if I love her or not. That's just how it was. And when we read throughout the scriptures in the Torah, they stayed within the boundaries of being an Israelite. Judah got off a bit and went and married a Canaanite and tried to make a way to get back to Tamar, but it wasn't going to work with his sons. But Yehovah worked it all out and made it work. And that's where Yeshua came from, through that lineage. From the beginning of our lives, we are elected to be the bride of Christ. Each one of us are the personal bride. I'm going to say it again, personal. Remember, Pastor said the other day, we learn to look in our cup. Keep our eyes overlooking everybody else's faults and things. It's your relationship with him, and we're learning to put the Torah on in its purest form as much as we can and get the dross off. Get that false ego off. That false ego, the false love, the way we think, the way we know it and see it. We are surrounded by it. It's everywhere. It's all false ego around us. But Yehovah is surrounded by dark and cloud, but his throne stands firm and it's immovable because of his word. And his word that comes from the heavenlies is the Torah, which we're learning to put on. And like Brother Scott was talking about, the gold and the silver, it had to be shined. All that dross had to come off of it. We're getting all the sinful nature, all the false ego out of us. Pastor talked about this. I keep this with me every day. He said, if you're going in an area where you're having problems with something, and it just keeps bothering you, he said, find out the truth about it. Study it and start practicing it on a daily basis over and over. And you won't be so thin-walled to give into it. You'll build up a wall of the Torah, of the true love, of the true whatever it is that you're going through, to where it won't bother you anymore. And I've been working on that in certain areas, and it's working. It's almost like it doesn't even want to enter my mind anymore. As before, it was constantly entering my mind, because I was meditating on it too much rather than what the truth of the problem is. So I started working on that on a daily basis, every day. And when it would go to pop up, I would remember the scriptures. I would remember the word, the Torah. And I would practice that and practice that. And the last couple of days, I'm like, man, I don't even remember that anymore. It starts going away. But you got to build up that wall. Build up that wall. Build up that wall. More of the Torah. More of the Torah. More of the Torah. And it just takes it over and it starts shining. And then you'll start having the reflection of Yehovah. Yeshua said, you see me, you've seen the Father, the living Torah. The living Torah that came from the heavens, that's immovable. So we are all elected to be the bride of Messiah, but for whatever reason, many people do not like their bridegroom and prefer to make it on their own. The result, as with the woman escaping an arranged marriage, is usually death. So too is a spiritual death for a person to flee from his election. That's a serious thing. I was reading this and I would pause sometimes and just thinking, backsliding, things that happen to many of us. And I'm like, that's what you do. When you walk away, you choose death. Spiritual death. So what about this idea of finding a wife? If a man could not culturally find a wife and the wife was picked for him, it is interesting that this verb matzah, to find, is an imperfect of future tense. If a man will find his wife, matzah, like other Hebrew words, have a wide range of meaning, and you must apply the context not only textually but culturally and emotionally as well to know the proper English word to apply. Matzah really has the idea of obtaining knowledge, discovering or finding out. That's why we fall in love with the Torah, because we're finding out what he's like. That's what the priestly garments are when you put it on. They said he had, across his forehead, he had Kadosh. It was a set apart, and his name was there, Yehovah, and it reflect Yehovah. That's why his heart had to have the right motive. He had to be just like his father, just like Yehovah. He had to be just like him. That's why he had it all right, because there can be no darkness around him. That's why Yehovah cannot be around us, because we'll die. Darkness will be shut out. Light and darkness cannot mix. That's why it's going to be 1,000 years. Another thing, we're going through all these Torah portions and we're learning all these things, and I'm seeing all the dross that's in my life. I'm like, wow, word. And it is so much packed in these Torah portions, and you want to get so much and you can't get it all. But I'm like, man, it's going to take over 1,000 years for us to get all this true love in us, the love of the Father, to get us to the purest form of the Torah so we can meet him. I just don't understand how you can say just save and not put 1 ounce of the Torah on you and try and work off the dross. It ain't going to work. Can you imagine the bridegroom looking for his jewels and there's nothing on there? And he's like, I don't know you. There's nothing that matches. Obtaining knowledge, discovering, or finding out. Here would be a word to fit the context. Whoever discovers his wife obtains knowledge of a good. In other words, this is not referring to before marriage, but after marriage. If a man searches his wife's heart and discovers all the good that God has put into her, he discovers a good. He discovers tov. Note, the word tov is generally translated as good, but as one rabbi once said, good is always in harmony with Yehovah. Thus, he who discovers that his wife has been given the natural instincts that God put in them, creativity, nurturing, withstanding, and being a pillar of support, he has found a treasure. Someone who can bring him into harmony with God. God created these instincts in every woman, as shown how every woman, no matter what her background, no matter how feminist she may be, has these very traits as a mother. It is up to the husband to love and care for his wife so he can discover these traits, nurture them, and bring them out in his home. And in the Torah, the wife of a woman to be matched would be a woman who obeys the Torah and not a woman of Babylon. I added those in there. We just can't love anyone. We got to make sure she's the right pick, match what the Father put us together. I'll tell you what, I was telling my wife that. I was like, you know what? We wasn't put together like this. And she said, hey, he put us together before we knew anything and before the foundations of the earth. He's like, he put us together. We just was graced. And now we know what to do with it. And we're working our way to being the right father and mother and husband and wife. But Scott brought something to my attention that I got to mention tonight also, referring to this. English translations, looking through Hebrew eyes. In the King James Version of 1 Samuel chapter 3, verse 3, it says, and ere the lamp of God went out in the temple of the Lord, where the ark of God was, and Samuel was laid down to sleep. When you look in the scriptural, the one we've been looking through that's got the names, it's got a lot of the Hebrew meaning in it. 1 Samuel 3, which is Shemuel, Aleph, Shemuel. And the lamp of in chapter 3, verse 3. And the lamp of Elohim had not gone out. So you're reading the King James, it went out. Then you're reading in this one that's more related to Hebrew, it had not gone out. That's a big error. I'm in a big error. So all your life reading this King James Version, you're being told it was out. But here it tells me the lamp of Elohim had not gone out in the Hekel, in the temple of Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh, Jehovah, where the ark of Elohim was, and Samuel, was lying down to sleep. So I'm just bringing that to your attention, that if maybe you never went and took a peek at maybe what we might be reading might be right or wrong, by just looking at an English translation and not going back and look through Hebrew eyes or Hebraic eyes, you might want to go back in matzah You might remember that word matzah. You might want to go seek out and look and find it. Because in the scriptures, the Father clearly says it in the Proverbs. It says, seek out wisdom. Search for it like it's gold, wisdom, knowledge, understanding. Get it. Get it with all you can get. Look for it. Search for it. And so here's our Torah portion for this week. Tetzaveh. Hebrew for you command. And this is in the Torah, Exodus chapter 27, verses 20 through chapter 30, verse 10. And the half Torah will be Ezekiel 43, 10 through 27. Topics in the portion, this week's Torah portion, Elohim tells Moses to receive from the children of Israel pure olive oil to feed the everlasting flame of the menorah, which Aharon is to kindle each day from evening to morning. We explore how the olive in the olive tree has always been a symbol of the whole house of Israel, and how the pounded oil represents the process of our purification through adversity, trial, and tribulation that better prepares us to shine and illuminate Elohim's word. As we put it in and learn it, not just be a hearer but a doer, those times are going to come for us to act. If we act promptly, the right way, it makes us pure, like pure oil. That's what it represents. And I'm not going to get into that tonight, but Scott can share that with you. This week's Torah, the priestly garments to be worn by the Kohanim priest while serving in the sanctuary are described. All Kohanim wore the ketanet, or ketanet. They'll tell you later on down there how to pronounce it. It doesn't show it right here. It doesn't sound like what is pronounced right there. It's like ketanet with a T-H-T-H. A full-length linen tunic. Miknas ayim. That's how you say that one. Miknas ayim. Linen breeches. Misnefet. And this one, it says mikba'ah. You got an H on there, and this one's got a T. So I don't know what the difference is. Mikba'ah. A linen turban. Avnate. A long sash wound above the waist. This week's, in addition, the Kohen Gadol, the high priest wore the ephod, an apron-like garment made of blue, purple, red-dyed wool, linen, and gold thread. The Koshen, a breastplate containing 12 precious stones inscribed with the names of the 12 tribes of Israel. The male, that's another word hopefully we can get into it tonight. Ma'el and Ma'il. There's two different words for this word here. A cloak of blue wool with gold bells and decorative pomegranates on its hem. The zit. A golden plate worn on the forehead. That's what I was looking for, brother. Let's talk about on the forehead. It's called a zit. A golden plate worn on the forehead bearing the inscription, Kadosh to Yehovah. Set apart to Yehovah. And that's how it should be read. And that's how it is with the Yod Heh Vav Heh in the vowels. We elaborate on a powerful symbolism and parallels between the high priest's garments and the armor of God, as well as the parallels between Messiah Yeshua as our high priest and the beautiful thought that he bears the names of the children of Israel in the breastplate of judgment upon his heart as a memorial before the Father forever. He's our high priest. And, you know, think about when you get born again, you get adopted in, grafted in, you become an Israelite, and he's got those names on his shoulder before the Father. He's making an intercession for all of us right now as we speak. So when you think you're in a spot, in the lowest spot, dark spot you don't think you can get out, he's praying over you right now. He's watching over you day and night. And so the same way he does that for us and all of his brothers, we should do the same for our brothers. We should think about that, bearing them on our shoulders. thinking about our brothers and our sisters, what they may or may not be going through. Maybe they're struggling in something. And I bring a bunch of them up every morning. I've gotten a habit of bringing up my pastors, and I got them all by name in here. I bring them all up, Brother Troy, Brother Scott, Brother Herman, Brother Jesse, Brother Preston. I bring them all up by name in the morning because Yeshua does that for me. And in the afternoon before I go to bed. Tetzaveh also includes God's detailed instructions for the seven-day initiation of Aharon and his four sons, Nadab, Abihu, Eleazar, and Itamar, into the priesthood and for the making of the golden altar on which the Ketureth incense was burned. The priest's garments. Exodus 28:1, and you bring near Aharon your brother and his sons with him from among the children of Israel for serving as a priest to me. Aharon, Nadab, Abihu, Eleazar, and Ithamar, the sons of Aharon. Exodus 28:2, and you shall make set apart garments for Aharon your brother, for esteem and for comeliness. And you speak to all the wise of heart whom I have filled with a spirit of wisdom, and they shall make the garments of Aharon to set him apart for him to serve as a priest to me. And these are the garments which they make: a breastplate, a shoulder garment, a robe, an embroidered long shirt, a turban, and a girdle. And they shall make set apart garments for Aharon, your brother, and his sons for him to serve as a priest to me. Now, when I first started looking at the garments, now we've already been through a message a while back about the Roman armor is not the garments that we're supposed to be looking. It's not the armor of God. It's not the way we've been portrayed of it. So when you start looking at what the priestly garments are at first, when you're reading it, it seems so big. You know, like feast days, they seem so big. But after a while of reading and learning what they are, each piece, there's really not a lot. There's the tunic, there's the robe, there's the ephod, there's the breastplate, and there's the zit. There's another word for it. But it's not really much to it as what you would think. But there's a lot of detail to it that it's going to be Torah portions to come to really let this sink in and get what they're saying. There's so much in it. Even the colors. Their colors are incredible. Because they make the purple, which was what the king wore, purple. It came from blue, which blue represents the Torah and the heavens, the pure word of God that came down. And then you have the living Torah, Yeshua, and he bled for us, which is the red. The scarlet is the red. So you put the blue and the red together, gives you the purple. That's how he got his royalty of the purple robe, of what he did. He lived the Torah, he died for us, and now he deserved that, earned that purple. For how he, that's just incredible, just the colors. And then I was telling Casey the other day, I learned that the red that they used for the dye came from a bug on a tree that protected its eggs. It would die protecting its eggs, and it would have like a red dye in it when you would grab it. So that's what they used for the red dye. As part of this, for the robes. It's pretty incredible. And they shall take the gold and the blue and the purple and the scarlet material. All these colors, the gold, the blue, the purple, it all has meaning to it. And the fine linen. And shall make the shoulder garment of gold, of blue and purple and scarlet material and fine woven linen, the work of a skilled workman. It is to have two shoulder pieces joined at its two edges, and so it is joined together. And the embroidered band of the shoulder garment, which is on it, is of the same workmanship, made of gold, of blue, and purple, and scarlet material, and fine woven linen. And you shall take two Shoham stones, and engrave on them the names of the sons of Yisrael. Six of their names on one stone, and the remaining six names on the other stone, according to their birth. according to their birth. He wants all this detail. And when we talked about Solomon, he had a way to do it. He did it his way. He didn't listen to the commands. He did what our world kind of does today. That's why the world's in the shape it's in. Because it does its man's way, and it's not the pure Torah way. With the work of an engraver in stone, like the engravings of a signet, engraved the two stones with the names of the sons of Yisrael. Set them in settings of gold. And you shall put the two stones on the shoulder pieces of the shoulder garment as stones of remembrance for the sons of Yisrael. And Aharon shall bear their names before Yehovah on his two shoulders for remembrance. And you shall make settings of gold and two chains of clean gold like braided cords and fasten the braided chains to the settings. And you shall make a breastplate of right ruling, a work of a skilled workman, like the work of the shoulder garment. Make it of gold, of blue, and purple, and scarlet material, and fine woven linen. It is square, doubled, a span its length, and a span its width. And you shall put settings of stones in it, four rows of stones. The first row is a ruby, a topaz, and an emerald. The second row is turquoise, a sapphire, and a diamond. And the third row is jacinth, and agate, and amethyst. And the fourth row is a beryl, a shoham, and a jasper. They are set in gold settings. And the stones are according to the names of the sons of Yisrael, 12 according to their names, like the engravings of a signet, each one with his own name for the 12 tribes. And you shall make braided chains of cord work for the breastplate at the end of clean gold. And as I'm reading this, I'm thinking about Linda, Sister Marlena. I don't know. They got a song for the kids that they're working on right now. And it's to do with the garments. And so I was asked if I can find some garments to put on. I think I can't tell who's supposed to be nominated. Put it on a certain person, okay? And so I got on the internet and I dug, let me tell you, for hours trying to find it like he said. And there was one person. Matter of fact, after I found that picture, that one person who made that, and they won't give it away, they won't sell it. It's so precious to them because it took them 2 years to make it like this, that they said they may sell it for $8,000 to maybe $10,000 if they thought about selling it, but they don't want to sell it. You can't find these. In different Halloween costumes, you can get close with this little square thing right here, but you can't find the white, the blue, the ephod. You can't find it. It's hard to find. So I'm like, the only way I'm going to be able to do this, we won't be able to do this year, but I think I could nominate Sister Randy if I can give her some materials. She's got the hands to sew. Look, we got workmen here that he talks about, and one of those work ladies is Sister Randy. So, I mean, I'm telling you, I was working my heart out just trying to find it and get it. I was going to order this piece here, this piece there, and we can get it in on time. And I just, you can't find it. Not in life size. You could find trinkets. You could find something, this, that, but it's not even close. But I know we can do it. We can do it. If it takes us a year, we can do it. And you shall make two rings of gold for the breastplate, and shall put the two rings on the two ends of the breastplate. And you shall put the two cords of gold in the two rings which are on the ends of the breastplate. And the other two ends of the two cords you fasten to the two settings, and put them on the shoulder pieces of the shoulder garment in the front. And you shall make two rings of gold, and shall put them on the two ends of the breastplate on the edge of it, which is on the inner side of the shoulder garment. And you shall make two rings of gold and put them on the two shoulder pieces, underneath the shoulder garment, on the front of it, close to the seam, above the embroidered band of the shoulder garment. And they bind the breastplate by means of its rings to the rings of the shoulder garment, using a blue cord, so that it is above the embroidered band of the shoulder garment, so that the breastplate does not come loose from the shoulder garment. And Aharon shall bear the names of the sons of Israel on the breastplate of right ruling over his heart. Notice where they are. Weight of his shoulders and near his heart. When he goes into the set apart place for remembrance before Yehovah continually. And into the breastplate of right ruling you shall put the Urim and the Tumim, and they shall be on the heart of Aharon when he goes in before Yehovah. And Aharon shall bear the right ruling of the children of Israel on his heart before Yehovah continually. And you shall make the robe of the shoulder garment all of blue. Blue. And the opening for his head shall be in the middle of it, a woven binding all around its opening, like the opening in a scaled armor, so it does not tear. And on its hem you shall make pomegranates of blue and purple and scarlet material all around its hem, and bells of gold between them all around. A golden bell and a pomegranate, a golden bell and a pomegranate on the hem of the robe all around. And it shall be upon Aharon to attend in, and its sound shall be heard when he goes into the set apart place before Yehovah, and when he comes out, so that he does not die. And you shall make a plate of clean gold and engrave on it like the engraving of a signet. Kadosh, set apart, to Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh, Yehovah. And you shall put it on a blue cord, and it shall be on the turban. Turban. It is to be on the front of the turban. It's the same thing that they wear when they go to karate, right? Well, that's not the turban. I'm thinking of the zit. That's the zit. Okay, so this is not the turban. Okay, I'm thinking of something else. Okay, scratch that. And you shall put it on a blue cord, and it shall be on the turban. Randy, you got your nervous in. You can post it. And you shall put it on a blue cord, and it shall be on the turban. It is to be on the front of the turban. And it shall be on the forehead of Aharon. Wait a minute. On the forehead of Aharon. And there, yeah, I am right. That is what it is. You're shaking your head no. Okay. And it shall be on the forehead of Aharon. And Aharon shall bear the guilt of set apart gifts, which the children of Israel set apart in all their set apart gifts. And it shall always be on his forehead for acceptance for them before Yehovah. I was talking about when they do karate, they got certain ones that wear on their forehead the little yin-yang and all the different things on there. That's what I was talking about. Where did it come from? You just got to ask yourself, where did it come from? The headband. Yep. And you shall weave the long shirt of fine linen and shall make the turban of fine linen. And you shall make the girdle of woven work and make long shirts for Aharon's sons. And you shall make girdles for them. And you shall make turbans for them for esteem and comeliness. And you shall put them on Aharon your brother and on his sons with him. And shall anoint them, and shall ordain them, and shall set them apart, and they shall serve as priests to me. And make linen trousers for them to cover their nakedness, reaching from the waist to the thighs. And they shall be on Aharon and on his sons when they come into the tent of appointment, or when they come near the slaughter place to attend in a set apart place, so that they do not bear crookedness and die, a law forever to him and to his seed after him. So that's the reading, chapters and the verses. Now we're going to get into the detail. This right here made me cry. Aharon and his sons were to be brought near and set apart. Aharon in the Strong's H175 means the light bringer or the light bearer. Let that sink in. A light bearer. Aharon, a light bearer. Nadab. Strong's H5070 means generous, willing, and a cheerful giver. What we just learned? To give what kind of heart? A cheerful heart. To give it with the right motive. It's coming as a light bearer. It's coming as a cheerful giver. And in Avihu, Strong's H3O, means he is my father. He is my father. And Eleazar, Strong's H499, means El has helped. Ithamar, Strong's H385, means land of palms. These names were so significant of what they were bringing forth before the Father in its true meaning. The light bearer brings a generous, is a cheerful giver before his Father. El has helped bring us to the land of palms. As we discussed in a previous Torah portion with the names of Aharon and his first two sons, we again, in relation to the oil and the light, we'll talk about that tomorrow, see a clear picture of Yeshua and that he is the light of the world, the generous one who will willingly lay down his life for us and is called the Father of Continuity. He is our master who has helped us and will bring us to the land of palms as the Torah lights our path, and our journey in Torah requires that we dress in him in his set apart garments of righteousness, serving him as a royal priesthood. You are a royal priesthood, a chosen holy nation set apart for him. That's what the scriptures say. The last son of Aharon, Ithamar, which means land of palms or coastlands of palms. You get into coastlands, it gets really deep there too. The lost tribes of Israel speaks of the righteous coming from the coastlands to learn the Torah. What are we doing? We're learning the Torah. Palms are likened to a righteous one. Tehillah, Psalms 92:12. The righteous one flourishes like a palm tree. He grows like a cedar in Lebanon. And we see the coastlands waiting for the Torah being spoke of in Isaiah 42:4. He does not become weak or crushed until he has established right ruling in the earth, and the coastlands wait for his Torah. Verse 2, just as Aharon and his sons were to be set apart for esteem and comeliness, so too have we been called to esteem and uprightness. Kepha, Bet, 2 Peter 1, 1 through 2, favor and peace be increased to you in the knowledge of Elohim and of Yeshua our Master, as his mighty-like power has given to us all we need for life and reverence, through the knowledge of him who called us to esteem and uprightness. Speak to all the wise of heart, all which have been filled with the spirit of wisdom. Mishlei, Proverbs 2:6, for Yehovah gives wisdom. Out of his mouth come knowledge and understanding. Proverbs 4:5, get wisdom. Get understanding. Do not forget. Do not turn away from the words of my mouth. 4:7. The beginning of wisdom is get wisdom. And with all you're getting, get understanding. When we light this menorah, this menorah represents the seven spirits that are before Yehovah, that up in the heavenlies. The spirit of Elohim, the spirit of Yehovah, the spirit of his wisdom. We need his wisdom. We need his understanding. We need his counsel. We need his might and strength. We need his knowledge. And the fear and respect of knowing that he's our Father. He's the creator of everything. And we need to adhere to his word. To know anything about this right here is impossible unless you read the written Torah or the Tanakh. That's where you find it at. You find in Isaiah 11. That's how I know it now, is because we do it so many times. That's what he set Shabbats up for, to go and continue to remember. You grow in family and love and peace and harmony. You don't disconnect. You don't grow away apart from one another. You grow close to one another. You grow close to the Father. When it gets on you, you'll learn to love your brother and your neighbor, because you learn how to love Yehovah the way he loves us. James 1:5. If any of you lacks wisdom, I like to say Jacob there, but I have to say James to relate to those who know the King James Bible, but it's Jacob 1:5. If any of you lacks wisdom, let him ask of Elohim, who gives to all generously and without reproach, and it shall be given to him. 3:17. But the wisdom from above is first clean, it's peaceable, it's gentle, it's ready to obey, it's filled with compassion and good fruits, without partiality and without hypocrisy. That's a total opposition of what the world acts in. And so we'll find ourselves constantly. Let me go back to that. The wisdom from above, see the blue? The Torah, the word of Yehovah, reminds me of his word, his Torah, his commands. You know, think about his commands today. We always was taught was, thou shalt have no other gods or Elohims before you. And until it was really looking at and brought to our attention, the first thing he talks about his name. And now how sad it is to go back and look at over 7,000 times you see a title there, Lord, rather than his name. And so he says, do not bring my name to naught. And I think about that on a daily basis when I'm listening to Christian songs and they say Lord or say Adonai. I say Yehovah, and I just practice that because he likes that. He wouldn't have said it 7,000 times now if he didn't like us to say his name, remember his name. Because this is my name, and you'd remember it forever. That's a command. So look at my little blue string here through the day, Yehovah. That's his name. Don't bring it to naught. If any of you lacks wisdom, let him ask of Elohim. Oh, I'm 17. But the wisdom from above is first clean, peaceable, is gentle, is ready to obey, is filled with compassion and good fruits, without partiality and without hypocrisy. Ephesians 1:17-18. That the Elohim of our Master Yeshua Messiah, the Father of esteem, would give you a spirit of wisdom and revelation and the knowledge of him. How many times we prayed that prayer? Over and over, that he would enlighten the eyes of understanding and revelation and knowledge of him. We said that so many times before we was enlightened to the Torah. We said it over and over. If there's something we're missing, lo and behold, here comes the Spirit of truth to guide us in all the truth. We'll give you a spirit of wisdom and revelation and knowledge of him. That the eyes of your understanding be enlightened. I'm like, I told the Father the other day, I said, Father, this is so much, but I want to know more. Open my eyes, open my ears. I want to see it the way you see it. I want to hear it the way you hear. We've been in a rabbit hole for so many years. Not just us, but other people for thousands of years have been in a rabbit hole of traditions and religions and the dogmas of men. And believe it with all our heart. And you know, if we would have stayed there, in the end, it would have been like this, not being his Torah, pure and clean, it would be all mixed traditions and religions and dogmas of men. And when all the trials and tribulations, all the heat that will come against us, what would happen with this if I lit this up with a lighter? It would burn up. We wouldn't stand. His throne, his word is immovable. Mixed, added onto, taken away from the Torah, religions and traditions and dogmas of men are going to burn up. They're not going to stand. But if it's the true word of Elohim, it's going to stand through every trial. It won't be moved. And that's what we're learning, to not be moved, to not be moved. And so many areas of our life. There's so many false ego things that we've got to work on, selfish and not selfless. That the Elohim of our Master, Yeshua Messiah, the Father of esteem, will give you a spirit of wisdom and revelation and the knowledge of him. That the eyes of your understanding will be enlightened so that you know what is the expectation of his calling and what are the riches of the esteem of his inheritance and the set apart ones. It is very clear that without the wisdom from above, we cannot accomplish that which Yehovah has designed and planned for our lives. And so as we get wisdom through his Torah and grow in our knowledge and understanding of him, we can find the wisdom we need to walk in the light and guard his word in us. And that's what we get, the true pureness of who he is and his character and what we need to look like, where we need to act. And how are you supposed to get if you have no interest? You know, what good does it do for me to wear this? What good does it do for me to come up here and speak tonight and come on Shabbat if I walk out those doors and I never do a thing written in here at all, nothing? It serves no purpose. What am I doing here? I have no interest. It's just like Solomon. He wanted to build the father a house. He wanted to build a temple. He went out there and he did all kind of dealings and doings like you would do in the world. But it wasn't with the Torah. It wasn't with the commands. He said, don't forget. Don't forget my commands. In the commands, he tells him specifically how to build it, how to do it. And then he tells him specifically how to put on these garments. So in here, we can find the wisdom we need to walk in the light and guard his word in us. Here in Shemot, Moshe was told to speak to the wise of heart, to those who have been filled with the spirit of wisdom, for it was those who are filled that Yehovah can use to make that which was needed. This being filled with wisdom is associated with those who diligently seek out his word, somebody that shows interest. Matthew 5:6, blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, because they shall be filled. It's not going to fall out the sky. It's not a magical trick. You got to have an interest. The bride and the bridegroom have to have an interest for one another. They have to be connected with the same thing. Filled with what? Wisdom from above. Yehovah was telling Moshe to speak to those who are truly seeking and hungering and thirsting for Yehovah and his righteousness. Those whom he has filled because of their earnest seeking. Are you hungering and thirsting for righteousness? For then you will be filled and be of great use in the master's hand. When I read this, I said, Father, I want to continue to be used in your hand. Please help me discard these things that don't belong in my life. I want to be able to be used by you. To look at things and not look at things I'm supposed to listen to things or not listen to things I'm supposed to listen to think about things. You know, let me tell you something. I was reading up on something, I don't know if it's in here or where it was, or listening to Pastor Isaac or something. I think it's where it was. Pastor Isaac. He was talking about who's the accuser of the brethren. Highest of times the accuser of the brethren. And I've been at fault many, many times looking at other brothers in here in the past. And looking at what they're doing and what they're not doing. And he brought that to my attention when he said, who's the accuser of the brethren who fault finds? Hasatan's constantly looking at every fault that he could find. Look at him this. And he's constantly judging them to bring them down in a negative, 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 to bring them down, bring them down. But what is Yeshua doing? He's not fault finding in the heavenlies. He's standing before the Father ever making intercession for us, this one or that one. I'm praying for them that their eyes be open, their ears be open. They don't have it yet, or they went off course. I'm praying that they get it. And that brought me to a spot to start praying for people that have been out, who aren't here, or maybe those who might be struggling with something that, or maybe I might be struggling with something, somebody be praying for me. But that's what Yeshua is doing. So that's why Yeshua made statements like, you of your father, the devil. Because sometimes we could be thinking about and saying something and gossip about somebody else. Oh, you like your father, the devil. Because it's surely not like Yeshua. We're not acting or talking like Yeshua. We're not thinking like him. So our thoughts constantly have things from the past. They have negative. They have positive. All kind of thoughts. So if our meditation is constantly like he tells us and commands us, we'll start ditching out the bad thoughts. Like he said, I rebuke you, Hasatan. So I rebuke that thought. And as you rebuke those thoughts, the wall gets built, the Torah gets built, and you don't do those things anymore. You look in your cup, you see your relationship, and you pray for those that are around you. They're going to get it. That's positive. Seems far away, they're going to get it. He's constantly thinking positive on behalf of us. So we're supposed to reflect him and do the same thing. And so that's what I've been learning to do in my life on a daily basis. constantly practices things that my master Yeshua is doing in the heavenlies for me, and not what Hasatan continually does all the time, constantly bringing havoc and chaos. The garments of Aharon, the high priest, let us first briefly look at the garments as listed in verse 4. The breastplate. The Hebrew word for breastplate is koshin, or koshin. Strong's H2833, which means breastplate, breastpiece, pouch, and it was made of gold, of blue and purple and scarlet material and fine woven linen. It held the stones bearing the names of the Israelites safely in place and is also carried in Urim and Thummim. A breastplate of right ruling. Remember right ruling? Mishpatim. Mishpatim is right ruling. Mishpatim and right ruling is the Torah. The Hebrew word for right ruling is mishpat. Strong's H4941, which means judgment, ordinance, or mishpatim. I said mishpatim. That's why I learned it, mishpatim. When I come across this, it's like mishpat. It's missing something. Mishpatim. So it's judgment, ordinance, regulations, and it comes from the primitive root word, shifat. Strong's H8199, which means to judge, to govern, to rule, pronounce judgment, or give law. Yeshayahu, Isaiah 33:22. For Yehovah is our judge, Yehovah is our lawgiver, Yehovah is our sovereign, he saves us. There is only one who gives us the law by which we must live and by which we are governed, and these judgments and right rulings and regulations given by him, we must do. We must do. Jacob says, don't be a hearer only, but a doer. The shoulder garment. The word for shoulder garment in Hebrew is ephod. Ephod, Strong's H646, which was a priestly garment, like a shoulder cape or a mantle. This was the outer garment worn by the priest that was white. However, the high priest, ephod, was more costly, woven of gold, blue, purple, scarlet, and linen threads. An ephod was a priestly garment like a shoulder cape or mantle. Shemuel bet, 2 Samuel 6:14, we are told that David was wearing a linen shoulder garment when he was dancing before Yehovah with all his might when they brought back the Ark of Elohim. After it had been at the house of Obed-Edom for 3 months. And so pictures for us a wonderful reflection of wearing true and pure garments of praise and service unto Elohim as we carry and bear his presence daily. You know, before I learned anything about the Torah, when I used to read that, that's all I knew, is that he just had a garment on. I didn't know anything about the priestly garments. I didn't know anything about those things. Now we learn it. It meant something. Shemuel, too, wore an ephod, even as a youth. Shemuel Aleph, 1 Samuel 2:18. But Shemuel was attending before Yehovah, a youth, wearing a linen shoulder garment. This verse we see here describing what Samuel was doing is an example of pure devotion in contrast to the wickedness of the sons of Eli, who defiled their duty as priests. The ephod represents for us the need for us to be girded up and ready to do the good works of the Torah that has been prepared beforehand for us to do, and speaks of being ready, attending to the required duty of the royal set-apart priesthood and Messiah, keeping the lamps burning as we wait for his return. Woo! I can't wait. All right. Luke 12:35-36. I still got a lot of work to do. Let your loins be girded and your lamps burning, and be like men waiting for their master when he shall return from the wedding, that when he comes and knocks, they open to him immediately. A robe. Am I going too quick? A robe. The Hebrew word that is translated as robe comes from the root word male. Strong's H4598, which means robe, mantle, cloak, an exterior garment which covers an inner tunic, and can also be described as a sleeveless coat. The word in Hebrew for robe has a very powerful lesson for us in terms of what we're discussing here, and that we are to be robed in true garments of righteousness and walk in them. What is interesting to take note of is that this word comes from the root word ma'el, Strong's H4603, and means to act unfaithfully, treacherously, violate, break faith. Now notice in that word ma'el, you have the mem, the ayin, and the lamed. Think about that. There's three letters. Just keep that in your mind. Ma'el, three letters, mem, ayin, and lamed. And this is the evil one, to act unfaithfully, treacherously, violate, break faith. Ma'el. This is what got me digging a little deeper, and then it struck me as I looked at the difference between these two words, and that is that the word for robe, which would picture for us robes of obedience, has one more letter than the word that renders one acting corruptly or being unfaithful. And so when we look at these words in the ancient script, we see a clear picture and message being given that we also see being portrayed in the difference between Samuel and the two sons of Eli. Let us look at these two words in the ancient pictographic script. Ma'el, three letters. Mem, ayin, and lamed. Strong's H4603, it means to act unfaithfully or treacherously, violate, break faith. Mem, the ancient script, has this letter as water and is pictured as water and also carries the meaning of chaos and can also picture that which is mighty or massive as well as the unknown. We're also able to understand this letter as representing the nations, for the nations are often likened to the seas in scripture. Knowing this letter represents water, we are also able to see how this can render for us the meaning of washing or cleansing. Ayin. The original pictograph of this picture is an eye and represents the idea of seeing and watching as well as knowledge, as the eye is the window of knowledge. Lamed. The ancient script has this letter as a shepherd's staff and give the meaning of to or toward and can represent that which pushes or pulls a flock in a direction and can speak of authority or a yoke that is used to lead and guide as well as the ability to bring back by authority. Me'il. This is the other word. Me'il. Me'il. You see the mem, the ayin, the yod. There's a yod in there. You see that? And then the lamed. Strong's H4598, which means a robe, a mantle, a cloak, an exterior garment which covers an inner tunic and can also be described as a sleeveless coat. The difference, as you can see, is the additional letter yod. In the ancient script, this is the letter yod, which is pictured as a picture of an arm and a hand and carries the meaning of work. I love work. I love work. The Father works. And he did an incredible job. And he's still doing it. He's still working. He's still working. From the primary function of the arm and the hand also represents worship or giving thanks and the extending of hands as a gesture of this. This also reveals to us a stretched out arm and hand. Rescue. Now, when we understand the meaning behind these individual letters, we see what makes the difference between serving faithfully and being unfaithful or corrupt in service. The difference between the two words that we are looking at is the picture of a hand or arm and hand. And so when we look at the word for robe, we can see the clear message of how Jehovah, out of the chaos of the waters, set his order in place through his instructions. Man had sinned and was naked and exposed, and Jehovah saw how man needed a covering. which he sent through the work of his outstretched arm and right hand, Yeshua Messiah, in order to redeem us back under his rod of instructions, being forever robed in righteousness. Without the true covering, our works will be exposed for their wickedness. It's going to be exposed by the fruit that they bear. The covering that makes the difference between a true robe and that which is false and wicked is the outstretched hand of Yehovah, the Yod. There's a Yod in there. When you take away the hand, there's no salvation. And it's just a works-based wickedness and treacherous service being delivered that is abominable before Yehovah. We saw that with Solomon. Same thing. The removal of the commands of Elohim and the idea of the false teachings that the Torah is no longer applicable is a removal of the hand and the arm of Yehovah. You can't take away from the word of Yehovah. It's got to stand the way it is. The removal of the commands of Elohim and the idea of the false teachings that the Torah is no longer applicable is a removal of the hand and the arm of Yehovah. You're removing your salvation, removing our rescue. The robe that Samuel wore each year is a picture of us having been clothed in the robes of righteousness as we walk in the Torah and we follow the creative cycle each year, starting with every Shabbat. Everything's in seven, cycles of seven, 7,000th year, seventh day, seven lights, seven spirits. Everything's in sevens. Any other attempts at worship that do not follow his clear instructions are nothing more than man-made traditions and rules that have removed the hand of Yehovah. Isaiah 61:10, I greatly rejoice in Yehovah, my being exalts in my Elohim, for he has put garments of deliverance on me. He has covered me with the robe of righteousness, as a bridegroom decks himself with ornaments, and as a bride adorns herself with her jewels. Righteousness, right rulings. When David brought back the Ark of Elohim, we are told that not only did David wear a robe of fine linen, it's supposed to be linen there, huh? Wear a robe of fine line? It's got to be linen. Robe of fine linen, but so did the Levites. Debrev Yahamin Aleph, 1 Chronicles 15:27. And David was dressed in a robe of fine linen, as were all the Levites who bore the ark. The singers, Kenaniah, the leader of the service with the singers, and David wore a linen shoulder garment. Our robes of righteousness is to guard to do all his commands. That's doing. Guarding. Our robes of righteousness is to guard to do all his commands. Deuteronomy 6:25. And it is righteousness for us when we guard to do all his commands before. All this command before Yehovah our Elohim as he has commanded us. Yohanan Aleph 2:29, if you know that he is righteous, you know that everyone doing righteousness has been born of him. Yohanan Aleph 3:7, little children, let no one lead you astray. The one doing righteousness is righteous, even as he is righteous. Yohanan Aleph 3:10, in this the children of Elohim and the children of the devil are manifest. Everyone not doing righteousness is not of Elohim, neither the one not loving his brother. See, we got work to do. We got work to do. Hazan, Revelation 7:13-14. And one of the elders responded, saying to me, who are these dressed in white robes, and where do they come from? And I said to him, Master, you know. And he said to me, these are those coming out of the great distress. having washed their robes and made them white in the blood of the Lamb. Hazan, Revelation 19:8. And to her it was given to be dressed in fine linen, clean and bright, for the fine linen is the righteousness of the set apart ones. An embroidered long shirt. The Hebrew phrase that is translated as an embroidered long shirt is written as, this word is tough. It tells you a little bit later on. It's ketanet. Tashbetz. This comes from the two root words, and it tells us right here. Thank you for helping me out here. Ketoneth. Ketoneth, Strong's H3801, which means a tunic, a garment, clothing as a covering, more complete than a loincloth, a basic garment reaching the knees. Tashbetz, Strong's H8665, which means checkered work, special woven, fabric, decorative fabric special, either because of the variegated pattern of the weaving or the special threads, the silver or gold, that would be interwoven within it. With it. And there's pictures you can find on the internet, and there's a picture in here. I saw it in the slides. Or pretty closely depicts it, how it's the variation of different colors. The Hebrew word ketaneth is used to describe the coat that Yisrael made for his son Yosef. In Bereshit, Genesis 27:3, and Yisrael loved Yosef more than all his children because he was the son of his old age, and he made him a long robe. This kind of robe, coat, was not an ordinary coat, but was seen as a royal robe and was a robe typically worn by the king's daughters, a robe that went to the wrists and the knees or even to the ankles. Now, we had a talking about this a while back about we always picture a coat of many colors with the stripes. And we asked ourselves the question, how do you know that's what it looked like? That's what was always taught in a storybook. So we had to go back and start doing our research and our homework because it has to match what the Torah says. It's got to line up with what he says, not just storybooks that man makes. Tamar, who was raped by... Did I skip one? No. Tamar, who was raped by Absalom, tore her robe that was defiled. 2 Samuel 13:18-19. And she had on a long coat, for the sovereign's maiden daughters wore such garments. And a servant put her out and bolted the door behind her. And Tamar put ashes on her head, tore her long coat that was on her, and put her hand on her head, and went away crying bitterly. We again see this word being used in Yeshayahu, which prophesied of what Yehovah, that's my place, would do, and was a powerful shadow picture of Messiah to come, the deliverance that Yehovah would raise up. Did y'all show a timing? Okay. I was looking at my timing on here, clicking, like, okay, I haven't looked up in a while. Okay, so we again see this word being used in Yeshayahu, which prophesied of what Yehovah would do and was a powerful shadow picture of Messiah to come, the deliverance that Yehovah would raise up. Isaiah 20:20-22, and it shall be in that day that I shall call my servant Eliakim, son of Hilkiyahu, and I shall put your robe on him and strengthen him with your girdle, and give your authority into his hand. And he shall be a father to the inhabitants of Jerusalem and to the house of Yehuda. And I shall place the key of the house of David on his shoulder, and he shall open, and no one shuts, and shall shut, and no one opens. A turban. We don't have too much more time left. So we can get what we can get here. This guy could talk about the oil, and maybe on Wednesday we can further our study in the garments. I tell you, there's a lot in here. And when you start emphasizing or talking about it a little bit, your time goes away fast. A turban. The Hebrew word that is translated as a turban, as turban, is mitznefeth. Strong's H4701, which means turban, head wrap, headband, an ornamental headdress, cap made by wrapping cloth around and around on the head. And comes from the primitive root word, sanaf. 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 Like sanaf. Yeah. Strong's H6801, which means to wrap, wind up together, roll, roll you tightly. A girdle. The Hebrew word that is translated as a girdle is abnate. Abnate. Strong's H73. Girdle, a sash worn around the waist. And there's the picture of it right there. Can you see that? The white tunic, the blue robe. Then you have the ephod. Then you have the zit, or they call it the turban. There was three different names they called it in here. So it's really hard to remember everything reading it for the first time. You can remember certain things, but a lot of things just gotta, it takes a little bit of time. You can't read any of this hardly at all. It's so small. Maybe I could read it for you. The first blue line is the breastplate with the settings of the 12 stones and the four rows. Hidden in the breastplate was a Urim, Tummim for right ruling. Then you see the second one down with the red line. The shoulder garments of gold, of blue, and scarlet material, and of fine linen. Then you see the little blue line, the third one down. Shoulder garment, robe. The robe of the shoulder garment is to be a garment of all blue. Then at the bottom, the very bottom, it tells about the bells and the pomegranates. Golden bells and pomegranates of blue and purple and scarlet material all around the hem. And you go back to the top. There's a yellow line that comes across. The turban made of fine linen. And it's got kadosh, set apart to Yehovah on it. You can't see it, but in the orange line, plate tells you right there. The plate of clean gold on the forehead and engraved with that on it, with kadosh, Yehovah, set apart to Yehovah. And then we're going to the purple lines. The two Shoham stones, each stone with six names of the tribes. And remember, they're put in order by their birth. The last two is the girdle made of woven work. And then the last one on the sleeves and the bottom is the embroidered long skirt shirt made of woven fine linen. And so that's about all we can get for tonight. Be ready to see y'all in the morning. And just remember, in the afternoons, when you go home, light your menorah. It's not just for here in the morning, but it's in the evening to evening. You go home with your family, you light your menorah. This is a service for us to start Shabbat, but we're learning more and more each Torah portion. We got to get all the knowledge we can get, because the more knowledge we get, the more understanding. He says, hey, matzah, matzah, right? You got to look for it, search for it. Got to find it and apply it. So we need as much as we can get, because I could tell you, I've had different people talking to me about all the craziness that's going on in this world, and it is crazy about, you know, about the COVID, about the illness, about the shots, and about this, and about, oh, God's going to, you know, some say God's going to get ready to do something because look what's happened to Israel. I'm like, you know, Yahweh is not moved by anything. He's got it all set in play already. And believe it or not, Israel is going to be almost annihilated. Women ravished. That's what the scriptures say. And right when it's almost done, that's when Messiah is going to return. There's not going to be some special thing that God's going to go and intervene for them because things are going crazy right now. It gets worse and worse. It says it's going to get worse. And so the worse it gets, the closer our redemption. And the closer it gets, we need to be ready that we're not shaken or moved by the things that goes on around us. If the Torah is truly being worked in our lives, we should be able to show those who are full of anxiety, all shaken in fear, that we're not moved because Yehovah is not moved. So that's what we come here for. We learn, and then we go do. We go do. And then after we do, we got to still be on guard, he says, to guard it. Don't let it go for anybody. Babylon's got some bright lights out there for you to grab a hold to. He says in Proverbs, he says, don't go near it. Don't go close to her. Because many, many mighty ones, she's laid low. Even the best of the best. Because they got their eyes off and started looking at Babylon, looking at the outside, the things that look pretty, might look right, they might look all right, might look better on that side, and end up in a world of mess. We got to stay with what the Father's telling us to do. Continually pray for our pastors up there, doing a mighty work there, meeting with our brothers up there and sisters and having a great time up there. And we thank the Father for all that happening. Keep them in prayer. Eyes to be open, ears to be open, minds to be open. And for each one of us and all our loved ones that are at home that are sick, Sister Gloria is not feeling good, I was told. She still needs to be lifted up in prayer. We keep praying for her. And many, many, many others. There's a friend of my wife's, her friend's father-in-law died. And so they have that they're going through. So there's many, many people going through things. There's many things we could pray for. So we're going to close at that and call it a night.